election extraordinarily lucrative. In 1988, he was paid his salary of $750,000, a bonus of $6.8 million, 2% of the profits over $100 million, and he earned $32.6 million by exercising some of his stock options. He had an unrealized profit of $50.5 million on the rest of his options. His total income of just over $40 million that year made him the highest paid executive in America. 4. Michael Eisner's outsized compensation was hardly lost on Jeffrey Katzenberg. In stark contrast to his boss's millions, Katzenberg was stunned to discover that, despite the fact he'd made Disney the number one studio at the box office, his own bonus that same year was zero. Katzenberg fired off an angry memo to Wells, expressing his disappointment and incredulity that notwithstanding the studio's remarkable string of hits and the success of television series like Golden Girls, Disney's calculation of his 2% of profits still came to nothing. Wells adopted a typically conciliatory but firm stance. He wrote back that Katzenberg was perfectly reasonable to have expected a bonus and acknowledged the enormous success of the studio. Nonetheless, he insisted that, under Disney's accounting practices, the studio was still running at a deficit, even though that was likely to change as soon as revenues were booked as profit. A confidential memo sent to Frank Wells calculated that the studio's output under Katzenberg since 1984 had accumulated a deficit of over $48 million after deducting distribution and overhead charges. By this calculation, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, far from the huge success it appeared to be, earned just $2 million on revenues of $18 million, more than offset by a $6.5 million loss on Adventures in Babysitting. Many of these pictures still have substantial revenues forthcoming, Wells continued, and of course will continue forever. An evident reference to the 2% annuity that was part of Katzenberg's original deal. Wells sent a copy of his letter to Eisner, along with a handwritten note, probably worth a quick read. Katzenberg wasn't entirely mollified, especially given the huge disparity between his compensation and Eisner's, which hardly seemed to conform to the spirit of the partnership they'd forged. Katzenberg's contract didn't expire for two more years, but he began negotiating a new deal with Wells that would extend his tenure at Disney. The course of the negotiations suggests that it was beginning to dawn on Wells, as well as Eisner, with whom Wells discussed the matter, that the provision in Katzenberg's contract entitling him to 2% of all profits from any project he generated while at Disney might turn out to be far more lucrative than anyone had anticipated. Wells immediately asked Katzenberg to relinquish his right to the 2% lump sum payment in the event he left the company. Katzenberg said he might, but only if Disney would guarantee that he'd make 75% of whatever Eisner earned, including bonuses and stock options. Wells rejected that out of hand, insisting the board would never tie one executive's compensation to another's. Katzenberg countered by asking that revenue from the re-release of the animated classics be counted toward his bonus.